Welcome to another edition of The Spirit Revolution. My name is Philip Coppens, and Kathleen can't be with us, but we have somebody else with us, and his name is Bill Kennedy, and Bill is the person who is one of the primary instigators in getting Kathleen and myself to Peru. Bill, welcome.
Thank you for having me. It's wonderful to be on your program.
Now, first of all, Peru is back with a vengeance, because just a few days ago, international headlines, specifically because Mail Online, which is the largest newspaper online, ran a feature which has been known for a few months already, but really with the publication in the Mail Online, it really has reached international attention, which is the discovery of gigantic effigy mounds in Peru, some of them dating 5,000 years back in time. And it's one of these things whereby the professor involved was only able to see them because of Google Earth and satellite imagery, because they were so big that he, in essence, couldn't see them from the ground. And only when he got the satellite imagery and was able to climb up and zoom in and zoom out did he begin to realize that what he thought might be something just outside of Lima, which he had once seen from above, that this could be a mound. He really identified it as such. And so he published in Antiquity in September of last year, but it's been only now, in April, that it really is getting mass publicity. And so once again, there is so much happening in Peru and so many new discoveries. So, Bill, first of all, before we delve into the schedule of what Peru is all going to be about, give us a bit of your own background and why you have begun to organize these tours.
Well, my academic background is in philosophy. I have a master's degree from San Francisco State University. I was a teaching assistant for Jacob Needleman, who's a well-known figure in the paranormal community. And I worked with Houston Smith, who's also very well-known. That was 20 years ago. So in the interim of those 20 years, I primarily become a writer and speaker and filmmaker on esoteric and mystical topics. Now, why I've gone into the tourism industry is a very good question, primarily because I always wanted to visit these places myself. But going, you know, just alone or on a regular tour never really interested me. And my friends who are also paranormal writers like yourself, I said to myself, how can I put these two things together? You know, people's desire to go on tour, because people would send me emails and ask me if I were doing any. You know, they'd hear me on different radio shows like Rents or whatever, and they'd ask me if I were doing any tours or sponsoring any tours. So this really came to me from primarily my own desire to go on these things, but also from my listening audience. People really want to go see the places that we talk about on programs like this and on the program you do on television, Ancient Aliens, which is very big over here in the States on the History Channel. So it's really a matter, I guess, economically, supply and demand. People are demanding that I go into this, and I'm just supplying a need that I see out there. Now, the difference between what I want to do and your average tour company is your average tour company will hire just about anybody to lead a tour. You know, they won't give them very much training. They don't pay them well. They don't know the subjects or areas that well. So it's my goal when I started a company called Mystic Travels to bring together the best scholars in the field with people who are interested in going on these tours, and also to have really good local experts, not just the run-of-the-mill tour guide, but someone who's been specifically trained in order to show specific areas and has a background in it. So just to sum up, I would say that I just wanted the very best tours possible with the very best tour leaders and local guides in order for people like myself who are interested into seeing fantastic places like Peru and Bolivia.
Well, absolutely. And I remember, you know, when I first tried to go to these places, it was scouring through endless of internet sites to catalogs of people who were flying to these places. And also, quite often, what's very important, I find, for people is staying in the right kind of hotels. There's definitely several ways of visiting these places, and what I found is that when you are backpacking, when you are, you know, 18 to the 30 year kind of like age range, you get to see quite often these sites, but you also will be sleeping in a tent, sometimes in the middle of a rain. And that is something which even people between the ages of 18 and 30 are not always that happy about. And being able to provide them with comfort is something which I feel is always very important, because during the day you're extremely busy. And then at night you just want to relax, you want to take it all in, you want to kind of like, you know, reminisce about what you've seen, prepare for the next day, and that needs to be done quite often in a relaxed environment where you don't have to worry about whether or not you're going to get soaked or, you know, going to get ill. And that is something which definitely is something which is quite often something which is overlooked, but not on this tour. And I mean, you know, Kathleen and I, we have been doing our own trips. We have gone to France. We're going to Bosnia, and what we find is precisely what you are finding, which is that an awful lot of people are afraid to go on their own for whatever reason, or specifically realize that if they were to go on their own, they'll miss out on certain things. And we've definitely been to places in France, sometimes the site itself, but also sometimes places within a church which you will never focus on if you were not there with us, because you would walk straight past it. And that kind of detail is something which really the group experience works really good at. And also, what we've learned about these group experiences is that the group begins to create its own momentum, but also that the group is able to begin to write part of the story as well. With that, I mean, if you go to a place by yourself, even if you're a single researcher, you get your own feedback. You can only talk to yourself. But when you are in a group, there is a group dynamic there, and people will say, well, let's test this out. Let's see how this works. Let's experience this site from just more than one person. And then you get to hear more feedback of the group, which is, as I said, very interesting as well. And, you know, Peru, I think, is a place which really is screaming to get more of this kind of tourism there, because it is just an amazing place. It's in my top destinations, Peru is right up there because of so many reasons. First of all, the countryside itself. We're going to interview Gary Evans in a few weeks, but actually the interview has been pre-recorded. And Gary was saying about how when he went up to the Andes, around Lake Titicaca, it is just worthy of going there for the scenery, and that's the case throughout Peru. There is so much diverging and diversified scenery there that it really is just, you know, phenomenal to look at. Second of all, the culture is so diverse as well. Lima has got very interesting things. One of the things is which I will always remember from Lima is that when you're staying in the Miraflora district, which is very beautiful, very posh hotels, very modern, very affluent, and then you go into the city square just to look at the cathedrals and everything of, you know, of interest there. And just off the main square is a little cafe, and just by standing in front of it, but specifically walking through its door, you are transported into what I would say is the movie Evita, starring Madonna and whoever stars in it, back to the 1930s or the 1940s, wherever it is set. And you know, it very much has never left that atmosphere. They have made it a conscious decision not to let go in that cafe of being in the 1930s, having that atmosphere there. And it's a remarkable just experience to kind of like almost travel back into time. And that's, of course, just the kind of, you know, the modern life in Peru of children playing soccer along the railroads, along the bridges. Peruvians are very fond of saying that across South America, they are probably the biggest soccer fans, but that they're also the worst at it. And then, of course, you know, we haven't even touched upon the fact that there is lovely food. And one of the things which I found absolutely amazing is actually the fact that the potato comes from there. I always thought that what in America, okay, potatoes in every country are slightly different. But there is not much difference between an American potato or a European potato, or for that matter, the African potatoes. And then you come to Peru, and sure, we all know about the sweet potato, and we, you know, like Whole Foods in America does do quite a big variety of potatoes. But when you come to Peru, there are so many more and so many different potatoes from the country that gave us the potato. And I was so flabbergasted by the amount of potatoes and the quality of the potatoes and the way they are able to make potatoes in different ways that I had this conspiracy theory. And I want to have your opinion about this, Bill. And this is this, that when the Spanish conquistadors came there and found out about the potato, the Inca basically sent their most crap potato back to the Spanish, saying, yes, this is really the best of all which we have, because really the potatoes we have are you know, nothing compared to the taste and the color of the Peruvian potatoes. And it's just shows you that as a country, you know, it is so much still in contact with its history. And it's easy because when you're in Egypt, you are thinking about a country which 3,000 years ago really was ancient Egypt. And ever since, the last 3,000 to 2,000 years was the decline of ancient Egypt. And then the last 2,000 years had really nothing to do with ancient Egypt whatsoever, and specifically not in the last 1,500 years. Well, 500 years ago, Hernan Cortes still hadn't conquered Peru. It was still Inca at that moment in time. And it was, of course, one of the last to be conquered, just after Mexico and the Mayans. But it's 500 years. On Ancestry.com, your family tradition background, your genealogy can take you back further than 500 years. And it really is, you know, you can touch it. Kathleen was doing her genealogy, and I believe to get to the 15th century, it's something like her 15th or 17th great-grandfather. So it's not that far back. And yet that was the time when the Peruvians were there.
No, it's quite amazing because when you look at their culture, the Spanish really didn't finally defeat them till 1572. That's when the last technical emperor of Peru was deposed. They were there for quite some time, and they kept driving the Inca south. But you're absolutely correct. Unlike most places, even in Latin America, the Peruvians have kept in touch with their Inca past, and they feel a very strong connection to it. They're very proud and happy about it. And what you were mentioning about potatoes, I would have to agree, because when I went to Lima about 15 years ago, I went, you know, to youth hostels, which were horrible, and I don't recommend that people do that for a variety of reasons I'd rather not get into. But I went to their market, and they had potatoes, as you say. We know a white potato, a russet potato, and a sweet potato. They have all different kinds of potatoes of different colors, which, as you mentioned, which is quite amazing. And they really haven't released them to the rest of the world. And there's a whole wonderful cuisine that they have down there that people will be able to enjoy if they choose to come on this tour with you. And I researched this carefully. I picked the finest hotels with the finest food, And there'll be a registered nurse who is bilingual in case anyone gets ill along the way. You know, you can get very good modern medical care. You know, God forbid something goes wrong, but it could. So I guess what I'm saying is when you go on a tour with Mystic Travels, and on this Inca tour in particular, you'll be in the very best, safest hands you can be in Peru and Bolivia. We even have local tour guides who are bilingual, who are all university trained. They're very strict down there as far as people they allow to be tour guides. You usually have to have a university degree and then undergo some training after that. So you won't be on a clunky bus with people that don't speak English, which is what happened to me 15 years ago when I went to Lima. And I had a very hard time because my Spanish was very poor. But there'll be bilingual people who will be conducting the tour the whole way. So in that sense, I want people to really understand that this is the safest and best tour you can take with the finest hotels and finest cuisine available in Peru. Peru is still very much, Lima is, it's a modern city, though it's retained its ancient heritage, but it's an amazing place to see. And even around you, as part of the tour, you'll see the ruins around Peru, and they'll even go to the Gold Museum, which is quite amazing. And maybe you could tell some of our listeners what they'd expect to see at the Gold Museum.
Well, they will get to see gold, and that is, to some extent is remarkable because there is so much gold. Obviously, the Spanish conquistadores' main emphasis was gold when they entered the New World. And what's little known is that most of that gold actually disappeared. It actually sits at the bottom of the Atlantic Ocean, because what happened was that all the gold was melted down into ingots for easier transport to Spain. And then when they the Spanish fleet left, they were attacked actually by English pirates who took all the gold. And then, as fate would have it, the English pirates themselves were subjected to disaster, and most of their ships sunk, and the gold set to the bottom of the ocean. Now, of course, not all this didn't happen to all ships, but quite a few ended up like that. The other gold was reached Spain, and pretty much because it was melted down, very little remained of it. The Spaniards were not at all interested in these pagan devil worshippers and their deities. They were only interested in gold. And so some of the gold has remained and has been taken now. When we're actually in Cusco, we will go and see the center of the Inca Empire, the Coricanco. And there is a sun disk there, which is a replica. The original one was either melted down or was secreted away. But the story is that the official story is that it was melted down. But when the Spaniards came to the Coricanco, they saw all the walls plated with gold. They saw an entire garden which had been reproduced in gold. They saw the sun disk, which was deemed to be the center of the entire Inca civilization. And it is said that the Incas themselves were able to take an awful lot of this gold outside of Cusco, that this was the legendary treasure of Atahualpa, who somehow is said to have taken it into the jungle, where it forever disappeared. But there are also stories, and people can go to mystictravels.info, and they will see a list of my articles there. And one of them is actually how gold was said to have been stored underneath Cusco and might still be sitting there to this very day. People were sometimes taken in by the local Inca people, and at one point some people were shown how to access the underground cavities there, and they were shown treasures from the Coricanca. And it is said that one of those people was there when it was, you know, let's say 10, 11, or 9 o'clock, whatever it was, and he could hear the bells of the cathedral above him strike the hour. So he realized that actually he was very close to the Coricanco, that he hadn't walked into some distance direction, but was very close to the location of the Coricanco. And so, you know, in the Gold Museum, what remains is pretty much very typical of the Inca, what little the Spaniards didn't touch and melted down into ingots. That's what's currently in the Lima Gold Museum. And it's you know, something to be seen, because there is very little left, but what is left is beautiful and shows you how well these people were. And it is interesting, because for them, gold didn't have any real value. It wasn't the backbone of the economy. For them, gold was of the gods. It was a divine aspect, because it shone. It was like the sun. And that was its importance. It didn't have any real value other than being a divine substance, which I guess is pretty good. I mean, you know, being a divine substance is probably better than being linked to the market economy of the 19th century. But yes, that's what's laying there in the Lima Gold Museum, and it's definitely something to be seen. And then, of course, we are also going to go to two other sites. One of them is Corral, and the other one is the Nazca Lines. I don't think I need to introduce the Nazca Lines too much, except to say that we are going to fly over them. And that we are going to visit, when we're not flying, various other aspects of the Nazca culture there. When it comes to Corral, well, this is the site of the oldest pyramids in the world, except for the Bosnian pyramids, which are older. But these pyramids of Corral are the oldest accepted by all the archaeologists, and they date to 3,200 to 3,400 BC, which makes them a full millennium older than the Great Pyramid of Egypt. Now, the reason why very few people have heard of this, and this is something which this is a story I might have said before on the air, but it is very important. When in 2008 I was at a conference, actually in Sarajevo, on the Bosnian pyramids, I was talking to Egyptologists, and I was painting the new landscape of the pyramid field, and I was pointing out to them that the pyramids in Peru were now the oldest. And they had never heard of this, even though the likes of Ruth Shady had done years of investigation. And it is interesting to see that, despite the fact that they're 1,000 years older than the Great Pyramid, despite the fact that you can visit them now, despite the fact that they are big, they somehow still are not being given the prominence which I feel they deserve. I can think of one television documentary, I think, which has been wholly devoted to them, but that's about it. And, you know, they are so old. They are the oldest, and they are continually to be explored. And in fact, it all depends on how quick researchers publish these things. But in the Supe Valley, where they are located, they are continuing to excavate sites, and within the next few months or years, that valley is going to give an even older pyramid date. These fields are probably going to go back to 3,600. And so if people want to be part of history in the making, you know, come October, that Corral Valley is there, or sorry, the Supe Valley with Corral in there, is there to be visited. And very few tours go there. Again, because it's just one of those things. And what I wanted to do with this tour was definitely make sure that we were offering things which nobody else was offering, and going to places where, you know, you would you would have great difficulties in getting on your own. And so from Lima, Corral and the Nazca Lines are two things which your standard tour doesn't necessarily do. Nazca sometimes is an option. It's more of an option, actually, if you do some of the boat trips along the coast. But this is just two important things of Peru which need to be seen by everybody who visits Peru.
Now, just to remind everyone, we're going to be flying over the Nazca planes and airplanes, which I set up, which wasn't too easy to do, but you'll be able to see all the famous Nazca line images, like the astronaut. There's a figure that looks a little like an astronaut, and a phoenix, and the monkey, and the spider, and all these wonderful things that you see on these documentaries. Now, as you also said, Corral is one of the more neglected archaeological sites in the world, and that is just amazing and spellbinding in and of itself. So people want to keep that in mind. We're doing things on this tour that no other tour that I know of, and I've scoured the internet, is really doing. So this is the unique Peru tour for 2012, and probably the most unique and outstanding Peru tour of all time, in my opinion, because, as you said, we're getting all these wonderful sites, but we're also getting experts who are there, and people will be able to participate in ongoing research. They will be able to bounce ideas off of you and off of other people on the trip. So this is a unique experience you're not going to get, like I did when I trekked through youth hostels in Lima. I was trying to find people to speak English. That was my big effort way back then. But just, I want people just to keep that in their mind. They're not just going on vacation. They're participating in ongoing important research and going to places that very few other people get to go. Now, what are the other things that you have planned, Philip?
Well, we also, of course, have to take in the standard sites. But again, I think we are doing it slightly differently. Machu Picchu is a staple ingredient. It's one of the top tourist destinations. But what most people do is, from Cusco, they will get on a train early in the morning, take the train down to from Cusco to Machu Picchu, get off, take the bus up there, spend a few hours on Machu Picchu, and then take the bus down again, take the train, and be back in Cusco. Now, Machu Picchu is on everyone's bucket list. It is not necessarily an important site, but it is one of the most beautiful sites in the world. Natural beauty and the way the town sits there is just something which you need to see to believe. And so for the standard tourist, it's a day trip from Cusco. What I wanted to do was really give people an opportunity to fall asleep and wake up in and around Machu Picchu, because it is something which you will, you know, cherish for the rest of your life, because it is something which is just magical. It is truly phenomenal. It is, you know, spellbinding to be running around there. And even though it is not that important, let me say that there are always sites which I say are easier to get than other sites. And what I mean with this is this. We're going to go in Cusco, which was the capital of the Inca civilization. Well, Cusco, you know, the Coricanca was a magnificent temple, gigantic, completed in gold. But guess what? The Spaniards came and they said, well, this needs to be stopped. So priests moved in, the gold was melted down, and the Coricanca basically became an abbey. Or a convent, whatever the right word is for what Franciscans do. And the town, all the big blocks which are so typical of Cusco, are there, but they are lining streets where people travel by, you know, numerous occasions per day. And the beauty of this magnificent empire, the capital of this magnificent empire, is really there for, you know, to be seen still, but you don't live it. You have to use your imagination. The natural beauty, the majesty of there, you need to have a guide there who is really telling you how all of this was, and then you will get it. But in Machu Picchu, you don't. Machu Picchu is very much the way it was a few thousand years ago, how it was built. You don't need imagination. The only thing you need to imagine is that there are roofs on top of some of the buildings, and that's it. And of course, the beauty is there because of its remoteness. The civilization has only penetrated to the very bottom of the site. And so what you can see in Machu Picchu is the sacred aspects of it. You can see the sacred mountains. You can see the shrines where they worshipped. You can see all of these things very easily, and you can still touch them. And that is something which I think Machu Picchu really sets itself apart as from various other sites. It shows you its innate beauty, its innate majesty. And that is something, you know, which is truly phenomenal. I went to, the first time I went to Peru, I went, you know, in search of the standard things, which we're definitely doing. But I didn't think that Machu Picchu was going to be that impressive, because guess what? We have all seen photographs of Machu Picchu. But, you know, that photograph sometimes speaks 1,000 words, but it doesn't tell you the magic of standing there. Now, I want to go back to why there is a nurse. This is not because Peru is dangerous, that people are going to fall, but there is something to be said specifically when we are in Cusco and Lake Titicaca, which is that these places are at 12,000 feet. And even if you're in your 30s and you're in good health, you will feel this altitude. The Inca people who live there are physically different from us in the sense that their lungs really develop themselves in that environment to get all the oxygen sucked out of the air and pump that into the body. And so when we arrive there, we basically need to take it slow. We need to walk slow. You know, we just need to take it in a relaxed atmosphere. But what quite often does happen is that in the morning, people who have some issues might kind of like, you know, want to kind of like realize that they are deprived of oxygen. This pretty much only takes the form of a bit of dizziness, of not being all that interested in the food. And after a few hours, you are absolutely fine again. But the fact that there is a nurse there will give, hopefully, everybody who is doubtful of going that extra boost of confidence to realize that, you know, there is professional care there for you, so that if you feel dizzy or anything like that because of the altitude, that basically professional help is at hand. Because you are, again, at 12,000 feet. That in itself is some of the beauty, actually, of this country, because you are at an altitude of 12,000 feet, and you have no real understanding of the fact that it is so high. Because, interestingly enough, the way Peru is set up is that the real big mountains are at 6,000 to 9,000 feet. That is really where you see the hills where Machu Picchu is located and where you can see these impressive hills. Once you get to the Lake Titicaca, you're at an altitude of an altitude plain. And Lake Titicaca is the highest navigable lake in the world. And it pretty much is very flat. It's a bit like Scotland. And in fact, if I were to show people photographs of certain sections of Scotland and of the area around Lake Titicaca, they might be confused on a number of occasions because it does look quite alike. But, you know, that's the thing. So once you are outside of Machu Picchu, when you're in Cusco and Ollantaytambo, you are at altitude, and to know that you, for whatever it is, whether it's a headache, anything, quite often what I find is that very simple things like headaches or problems with your stomach are the two biggest problems people will always face no matter where they go. And it's whether it is, you know, somebody from New York going to California or the other way around, whether it is going to Mexico, Egypt, Europe. These things just happen because our bodies are largely, you know, never immune to whatever is going around somewhere else in the world. Viruses, go around the world and they start off somewhere. I have been to France on, I would probably say, more than 100 occasions now, and I sometimes still get ill simply because there is a virus going around there which my body hasn't been exposed to. And just to have a nurse there who is able to give you a very tiny pill will just mean that you will enjoy your holiday, whereas otherwise you need to go in search of a pharmacy, trying to figure out what precisely it is. All of these things just get nipped in the bud because of the presence of a nurse there.
Oh, sure. And just to make it clear, that very few people, it's rare that anyone gets seriously ill going to Machu Picchu or any of these elevated places. And the nurses there are as much for psychological relief in case you do get a headache or feel a little lightheaded or something like that. But people go there every day of the week, 365 days a year, and on the whole, there's very little trouble. So that nurse is there in case something does go wrong, but it's just a precaution. It's very rare that people get seriously ill in Peru. But the thing is that these places are also very remote, so you want a medical professional there just in case someone could twist an ankle, things could go wrong. Things do happen, but we are preparing for it. And again, if you go to mystictravels.info, you can get all of the information on this, including the fact that we're having a registered nurse along with you. If anything seriously did happen, there's certainly a way to get you to a modern medical facility very quickly. I want people to understand that and not be frightened away by the remoteness of some of these areas. But there again, these are very rare things, and I've taken all the appropriate precautions concerning going to a foreign country. So don't be afraid of some of the things that might come up. As you say, this could happen going from New York to California. You could get ill. I have prepared for that, so it shouldn't be any issue for anyone who's concerned about anything in that particular area. Now, it's quite wonderful. One thing I notice is that some of the mountains down there have kind of a purple glaze to them. And it's quite amazing to see you. As you say, film and photographs cannot capture the majesty of these places. And even Lake Titicaca has a shade of water which is quite different from anywhere I've ever seen in my life. It's really amazing. And if you go to mystictravels.info, photos, but the photographs really don't do these places justice. You have to go see them yourselves. And this is more than a vacation. I call this an adventure of a lifetime because of all the diversity within Peru and Bolivia that you'll be able to see. You will never get this kind of opportunity again, I don't believe. And we hit all of the major sites. Anyone who is a fan of a lot of the History Channel programs on the paranormal, like Ancient Aliens and a few others, should really take a look at mystictravels.info and consider going and participating in this wonderful ongoing research to these amazing places. Now, Philip, what other things can people expect to see on this tour?
Well, I mean, the big one, it's Pumapunku. Pumapunku is the, in my book, the best evidence for ET contact in the world. And that was underlined a few weeks ago in series 4 of Ancient Aliens when Pumapunku was the only site ever to be given an entire 1 hour to itself and in the exploration of. It's everybody constantly says Pumapunku is the absolute site they want to see. And what I found interesting about, or what I was lucky about, was that the television show, the special on Ancient Aliens on Pumapunku, actually incorporated some of my theories on this site because there's been an awful lot written about Pumapunku. Pumapunku has, or is officially dated to about 800 AD, but that is purely by circumstantial evidence. You cannot date stones. And so the dating occurred because they have found something near the stones which they were able to date to 800, but that in itself had nothing to do with the Stones. It's like dating a Mars Bar rapper from Stonehenge and thinking that the Mars Bar rapper has anything to do with the construction of Stonehenge. It doesn't work like that. You know, even if today we were going to date certain things from Stonehenge, well, there's been restoration done to it. So again, you know, beware of rapid conclusions. And there is something to be said for the fact that our ancestors absolutely understood that Pumapunku was special, that Pumapunku was a very important site. And the reason why I think that is very simple, because it is said by the Inca themselves that that area of Pumapunku and Tiwanaku was the site where the creator god Viracocha appeared on this planet and stayed before he walked down the sacred valley with such sites as Cusco and Ollantaytambo. Now, as it's happened, all the sites in Peru are spectacular, but there are three sites specifically which always are singled out for the ancient alien touch, and that's Cusco and its surrounding things like Sacsayhuaman, Ollantaytambo, and the Tiwanaku Pumapunku area. And that is simply because on those three sites, or three areas, the amount of building, the type of building, is just of a different category. It is simply out of this world to see the way these blocks lock into each other and are earthquake resistant. They were built because the people who were building them realized that by building them in this way, they would be resistant to earthquakes, and they have been so. And again, they are dated to 11 to 12 to 13 to 1400 because this is comfortable for archaeologists to do so. But when we're there, we will see the difference between Inca architecture and these stone blocks, and it's remarkably different. But you know, all of those things still do not explain Pumapunku. Pumapunku is even in a different category. And what the Ancient Aliens show also included was some evidence that nearby material had been found which had Sumerian inscriptions, and that parts of the complex of Tiwanaku, which is basically, Tiwanaku is quite often the nomer for everything to do with this site, and then Pumapunku is in essence part of the Tiwanaku site. And what they found or what's on display in Tiwanaku are faces, and pretty much the faces there are not just your usual Inca face, but quite a diversity of the various species of mankind. And the little theory which they did include in the 1 hour special, which I've kind of like came to, was that I think our ancestors realized that this was a site where the gods had come down to earth. It was definitely the legends of the Inca, so the Inca absolutely believed this. But I think other cultures came there as well and came to see this magnificent site, which really was created not by human hands, but created by a creator god who came from elsewhere and lived there and you know, could have been the person who was responsible for Pumapunku. That is definitely something which I think is a very strong possibility, and something which I hope we are going to be able to explore in the near future, but also hopefully other people will pick up on. But those Pumapunku, Cusco, Ollantaytambo are all about the impressive building works. Ollantaytambo is a magical site, and we will not have them on the tour, but I will have the information with me on the tour, because about 15 years ago, two brothers called Salazar began to do research and began to reveal that Cusco wasn't just built, but that it was built in the shape of a cougar, a puma, and that it was done so because this was the royal animal. And so the king wanted his capital, when viewed from above, to look like a puma. And that is something remarkable because, again, we are talking here about being able to see these things from a very high distance. And so these brothers realized that there were these legends, and at that moment in time there was the technology to verify that all of these things were indeed true. But they also began to explore more and on their own. And they made some stunning discoveries, including at Machu Picchu. But at Ollantaytambo they made a remarkable discovery, which is that Ollantaytambo sits at altitude as such, but also sits on the side of a river, which is quite deep below. And when you stand on the main side of Ollantaytambo and you are pointed out as to where these stones come from, you literally kind of like want to give up. You want to go back in time and tell the people who were building Ollantaytambo to just forget it. This is something which is never going to work. This is just way too hard. There's no way these stones will ever get down into that valley and then up the hill again. And guess what? Of course they did. But that is one aspect of it. But in the down in the valley below are fields. And the Salazar brothers were able to identify that some of these fields were aligned to very specific periods of time, the equinoxes, the summer solstices, winter solstices, and that a shaft of light coming from the sun obviously hit very specific spots in this valley. And so they mapped this valley, and what they realized was that the fields were so carefully constructed that when viewed from a temple high above the valley, what you saw below you was in the shape of a pyramid. And so what the Inca had done was create in two dimensions a pyramid, but when viewed from above, it gives an optical illusion as if it is a real pyramid, as if it really jumps out. And the two places where the sun hits on these important dates were linked as gateways. So very specific fields were made to give this notion that the sun was hitting there and somehow making an entrance into this 3D rendered pyramid. And again, it's something which you will only ever see when you are there. It's you know, I can show you photographs in a book, but it is not going to make the impact for being there. And when you know, like when you look at Viracocha's face, because there is a face etched out in the hill which overlooks Ollantaytambo, and when you look into that, then you are really coming face to face with the creator god Viracocha. Again, that is something which you have to be there to experience. This isn't tourism. This is really going into Peru and coming face to face with this culture and stepping in the footsteps of our ancestors and realizing what they were doing and what their culture was about and experiencing it for yourself.
That's very true, Philip. This is much more than just a vacation or a holiday or a tour. This is a plunge into the mystical dimension of the Inca, which you will really not get on any other package that I've seen out there, especially these special things that you're talking about that even some of the people down there who work in these ruins all the time may not be aware of. They tend to become specialists in very particular areas. Now, one thing I certainly want to point out to your listeners is if they go to mystictravels.info, I have all of your articles on the Inca put up there, as well as a link to the episode of Ancient Aliens you spoke about earlier. So they can take a look at what you're thinking about the Inca and also watch that film, which is very, very well worth looking at when considering taking this tour. It will give you like a very slight appetizer of what you will actually see when you go down there. Again, that's mystictravels.info. I also want to let people know that there's an email address and a phone number there that they can contact me to answer any questions they have about the tour whatsoever. Again, it's mystictravels.info. There's a lot of photographs of the things you will see in a very detailed itinerary, a description of where you go when. And again, this is a mix of mystical Inca civilization with a touch of modern luxury. You know, I made sure I went out of my way because of my own experiences when I went to Peru, which half the time I didn't appreciate anything because I didn't go to the right sorts of places or have the right kinds of people around me. I didn't go to very good hotels. I went to hostels. So you will have the finest hotels, the finest cuisine, a nurse there in case you get ill. And if people want, I can send them an information packet on what they'll need to bring with them. You know, you are going into the mountains and it gets cool. So there again, if you go to mystictravels.info, you can contact me and I can give you any information you're looking for. There's ways you can pay for this in installments. You don't have to pay for it in one lump sum. We can break up the payments, which will make it much easier for people. It's really going to be a smaller tour, and I think if you want the adventure of a lifetime as opposed to, you know, mass tourism, which can be very alienating and very, you know, waiting in lines and this and that, I've done my utmost to avoid all of that and home right in on these sacred sites so they can have discussions with you and each other about the mystical significance of the Inca people in this wonderful physical remains that have left behind. It's quite amazing how much has survived down there. As you said, a lot of these places like Machu Picchu, they were just left alone. The Spanish didn't redevelop them. No one's really touched them. They're pristine. And the physical landscape, as you said, which I can vouch for, is quite amazing. Now, for people who want this information at mystictravels.info, they can call me up or email me, as I said, but there's a ton of information there. And if for no other reason, go to mystictravels.info and watch that Ancient Aliens six articles by Philip Coppens that are there, and you'll get a really fantastic overview of who the Incas were and what they mean to us. And you will get the full mystical dimension of the Incas if you decide to join this tour. Now, Philip, what else would you really like to point out to people who are considering going on this trip to Peru and Bolivia?
Well, first of all, I would like to point out that when Kathleen and I started doing trips to Sacred France, we were always extremely surprised to learn that quite often when you go to on trips, you know, like trip with Mr. X or Mrs. Y, that quite often the time availability of Mr. X or Mrs. Y was apparently strictly limited to a few hours on a number of evenings and stuff. You know, I will tell you that doesn't work for me. I am there at 7 o'clock in the morning when I wake up after a shower and having breakfast up until 11 at midnight. So, you know, don't think that I will just be there a few hours each day. I will be there every single second and available every single second and doing things every single second with everybody on this tour. But, you know, the one thing I think which needs to be said is that Peru is one of those hidden gems. It is a site where still things are being discovered on a daily basis. In my opinion, it's got the best evidence for ancient alien visitation. It has the oldest pyramids. It has enormous geoglyphs, which are, you know, just amazing to behold. There is so much diversity. It is a lovely country. The people are lovely. It is beautiful scenery. And it is so little visited. And really, if you want to go somewhere specifically, how should I put this? Peru for a European is a challenge because it is quite a long way. It's 14 hours of flying from Europe, but for America, it's easy. You have direct flights from most big cities to Lima. And it's not that far. Yet there is something about South America which remains undiscovered, which is why, you know, there are so many television shows being done about it, because it is known to intrigue, and somehow there is this barrier. And really, there is it's amazing to me, and it's about time that barrier gets broken down, because Peru is a lovely country. And, you know, it's there for the exploring. And if you want to explore it with us, then please join us.
Oh, certainly. And there again, the information is available at mystictravels.info. And again, my name is Bill Kennedy. I run Mystic Travels. And I'll be happy to answer any questions via email or telephone. And if you just want to chat, if you're considering it, let me know. Again, one thing that some of the people I've talked to, you can break up the payments, so you won't be hit with the entire bill when you get on the phone with me. So don't worry about that. And I want people just go to mystictravels.info and consider, do you want a vacation? Do you want mass tourism? Do you want to wait in lines throughout outside of museums? Or do you want an adventure of a lifetime where you will participate in ongoing research concerning the Inca people and the vast and wonderful civilization that they left behind? Now, you know, if you're looking for an economy trip to Disneyland, that's one thing. You know, you can certainly do that. But if you want something that will touch you in a deep and spiritual way, you want to consider the Inca Tour 2012 with Philip Coppens, where again the information is at mystictravels.info. Now, Philip, if people want to contact you about the trip, is there a web page they could go to you and send you an email directly?
Absolutely, they can. They can write to info@philipcoppens.com. They can use, if they are listening to this on the Spirit Revolution website, they can just use the Contact Us button over there. So throughout the usual means of contacting me, all of those work on my website as well. And on spiritrevolution.com, we will definitely put up the links to mystictravels.info, so people can click through there and explore the articles, the itinerary, and express their interest if they so want to do so. Bill, I'm going to thank you for organizing this amazing tour. We have come to the end of our show, but hopefully this will be the beginning of seeing many of our listeners in person in Peru in October. And if you want to hear this show again, you can do so in a number of ways. You can go to iTunes, where it is downloadable for free. You can go to thespiritrevolution.com, where it is also available as an archive for up to 5 weeks. You can go to the BBS Radio Archives at bbsradio.com, where you can listen to this, but also all of our previous shows, as well as so many other shows which are aired on BBS Radio. So, several ways of doing these things. We have come to the end of this episode, but we will be back next week with another one. Until that moment in time, from the two of us, the truth against the world.